I'd like to aim this part of the Q&A at people who are 35 and younger. I'm going to run through a series of books. In effect, I'm going to ask you to deliver an impromptu annotated bibliography, what you think of these various resources, books, and biographies.
Even though I'm older than 35?
That's why we have an editor. No, I think you can
all
boil
right.
it down.
Go ahead.
You can boil it down. And you can do some editorializing in the way. It doesn't have to be straight bibliography. First book. Goes back nearly 30 years, but it's one of the first books I read, Stephen Oates with Malice Toward None.
Absolutely outstanding biography of Lincoln. One of maybe two or three in our lifetime. David Donald's Lincoln being one, and Benjamin Thomas's Abraham Lincoln, a biography in the early 50s being another.
I was going to ask you about that next.
Here's an anecdote about Stephen Oates, who also happens to be, I must disclose, an old friend, retired from UMass Amherst with serious back pain. Hasn't written since. Tragic because of that pain. A week before the 2006 election, I'm at a steakhouse on Federal Hill, which is the Italian section of Providence, known for its restaurants. I'm having dinner with a judge, another judge in our judiciary, and his wife, Beth. In walks former President William Jefferson Clinton, who had just attended a rally for U.S. Senate Democratic candidate Sheldon Whitehouse, who eventually went on to unseat Lincoln Chafee. Sheldon says, "Mr. President, I want to introduce you to Chief Justice Frank Williams." "Hello, Judge. I had never met the president before. He wasn't one of my favorites.
But he's such a people
person.
But
take nothing away from the charm he exuded."
Yeah, right.
And I start to get up, and it's a very tight table. Booth. He says, "You don't have to get up for me." And I says, "Mr. President, yes, I do." I got up, shook his hand. Sheldon then says, "Mr. President, the chief is you know, an expert on Abraham Lincoln." And Clinton says, "Oh, really?" And I says, "Yes, Mr. President. In fact, you and I have a mutual friend, Harold Holzer." "Oh, I love that guy," because he had read Harold's Cooper Union. Harold, who was a Yellow Dog Democrat, had met him in the White House and so on. And we spent the next 12 minutes talking about Lincoln. Now, what's the point here? He said, "You know, Judge," he said, "the best Lincoln book that I read was Stephen Oates's With Malice Toward None." I said, "Mr. President, Stephen's a friend. He's suffering from this back problem. I'll tell him. I'll tell him you said that." He says, "Not only that, Judge," he said, "when I finished reading his book, I was in tears."
Yeah, me too.
And so, of course, we chatted. We talked about Joshua Wolfshank's book on Lincoln's melancholy. And Joshua was a great guy. It was a little too much on the depression. We talked about other things. And when I got back to Chambers the next day, I emailed Stephen Oates and told him, because it did what it should. It was like therapeutic for Stephen just to hear this from, and I don't think he thought much of President Clinton's leadership, but he's still the president.
That's right.
And deserves the respect and the institution and everything else. So that's a very long annotated answer on With Malice Toward None. But how could I not give it to you?
Oh, it's a wonderful story. And speaking of tributes from people across the partisan aisle, it turns out that not only does former President Clinton like Harold's book on Cooper Union, but Newt Gingrich is going all over the place saying that the book added to his knowledge
I've
of Lincoln
that.
Profoundly.
I've seen that.
It was in Fortune magazine last week.
I've seen that. I've heard that. Yeah.
You refer to, on page 166 of Judging Lincoln, the James G. Randall book. You went on to say he would become the greatest Lincoln biographer. I guess he spent decades doing
yes.
this set of books. Why is he the greatest?
The first academic-trained historian to cover Lincoln in a very general sense, and he did the first multi-volume biography of Lincoln, and also a very signal one volume on constitutional problems under Lincoln. Much of what he did and said may be outdated with recent scholarship.
But it still stands the test of time?
It does. Not many read them, but it does.
Jay Winnick's book, April 1865.
Excellent book on giving a sense of the culture of the times.
Does he try to do... My problem with it was he tried to take that idea of 30 days and cram so much into it.
Well, he did. He did. That's overdoing it. So it's really, really a misnomer because it does cover more than a month, as you know.
Okay. And
but he gets away with it, though.
Yeah, he gets away with it. It's very eloquently written. I have to ask you about One Way Out book, though, in terms of form, writing style, etc. It seems like a perfectly mainstream book. It goes back to 1937. Author was Otto Eisenschimmel. The title was Why Was Lincoln Murdered? I heard about this book. I had to go to the Library of Congress to get it. And, of course, it says that this is a circumstantial thing that proves that Edward Stanton was organizing a plot against Lincoln.
He's way off base. And
I
think Otto was a chemist, and he tried to approach this thing scientifically, and all of the evidence belies his thesis. Stanton was not a part of any conspiracy. There's been absolutely no probative evidence of that.
And he says at the end, at the very end, there's a paragraph saying, I admit I can't prove any of this
well,
directly.
Well, then that's it's it.
But nonetheless, it was fascinating detective work. It must have shook the Lincoln community enough
Then,
three years later, a rebuttal came out.
Then, but every examination of the assassination, whether it come from William Hanchett or Ed Steers Jr. or Michael Kaufman or any of them in between have devastated the thesis.
Okay. What are some words you would use to describe Lincoln's Secretary of War, Edwin M. Stanton?
Mean-spirited. Bright. Fantastic work ethic. Articulate.
Good administrator?
Outstanding administrator. And finally, after insulting Lincoln in that patent case that was tried in Cincinnati, and only someone with the leadership skills of an Abraham Lincoln, as Doris Kearns Goodwin points out in Team of Rivals, could take advantage of someone and overlook the insult.
Right.
And I'm finishing that. The sentence, in an awkward way, a close friend of Lincoln, who was devastated at his loss.
How long did it take him to develop that friendship? Once
Months, because Simon Cameron really was fired as the first Secretary of War. He didn't have the skills. He was called the Indian Chief when he was governor of Pennsylvania because he was stealing from the Indians. And they were terrible, not that he may have profited personally, but terrible government contracts that favored contractors that had tents that were falling apart and uniforms that didn't stay together. So he's exiled to Moscow or St. Petersburg as the American plenipotentiary there. Lincoln hires Stanton to help straighten out the War Office, and they developed this relationship just like Lincoln developed a relationship with Seward, who wanted to be president and was hurt over not getting the nomination. And when Lincoln was elected, he thought, you know, he was going to be the prime minister as Secretary of State.
Right.
So Lincoln was able to handle these gigantic egos and men of great talent with skill and diplomacy, and Stanton was one of them.
Let me jump ahead, and I'm going to go back to books, but since you brought up Seward, I have another question here. To round out the picture for our younger web readership, the same exercise. Give us a series of words or phrases that fit Secretary of State William Seward.
Absolutely gregarious, politically astute. He was the boy governor of New York.
Right.
Then, of course, an esteemed U.S. senator. Good family man. Very skillful politician, if I didn't already say that. That was good for Lincoln in the sense that they acted so well together that one complemented the other, even with Seward's ego. Seward, unlike Chase, who never gave up the quest for the presidency and worked behind the scenes to thwart the president with his radical allies in the Senate and Congress, even though Seward may have made mistakes and judgments like the Trent affair and wanting to get into a war with Spain over Cuba, to get the attention away from the Civil War, and Lincoln would bring them back to reality one war at a time. They were a tremendous partnership. And the other thing on a personal level, even more with Seward than with Stanton, is that these two old-time politicians would share great stories together in carriage rides or in the executive mansion, as the White House was called. And I think that just added to Seward's luster in Lincoln's view.
If Abraham Lincoln had never been born or had been disappeared earlier, we might have been okay with Seward as president?
Yes. But I sometimes worry about his judgment of you know, taking on Great Britain or Spain or war with Mexico or whatever.
He was Churchillian in a somewhat bad
sense.
Yes,
he was. That's a very good comparison with Seward and Churchill. And I'm a great admirer of Churchill.
For our younger listeners, Secretary Seward managed to buy Alaska from the Russians for 2 cents an acre. Had this not happened, we'd have ended up with 60 years of Cold War with part of the Soviet Union on the same continent within 2 days' drive of Seattle. You talk about a legacy. Some decisions really, really stand the test of time.
Yes, and you don't know them at the time you make them either.
That's true. You know of a good biography on Seward?
Alan Nevins did one on Seward.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, John Nevins, not Alan.
All right.
Now deceased. Taught out in California, John Nevins.
I'll get the name of it, we'll put a link in, etc.
Right.
What are some of the, Eisenschimmel, but what are some of the, and it's hard to believe there are any left with thousands of books having been written, but in your opinion, Judge Williams, what are some of the honest-to-God mysteries still out there today about Lincoln that even after your lifetime of study still cry out for some new thinking or original research?
Well, I'll answer it generally first, if I can. As much as Lincoln was a public man, lawyer and politician, two careers, he was also a very private person, and he kept a lot of things close to his vest. Call him enigmatic. And I think to get to that is the challenge for scholars. And sometimes we do and sometimes we don't, depending on what we find for evidence. You just can't make it up and tell it. Some people try to do that. De Lorenzo is one. Michael Lind, unfortunately, in his book. De Lorenzo has another book coming out. He's a libertarian, hates all kinds of government. What are some of those things? Well, we may be close to saying that he authorized the Dahlgren raid into Richmond by Ulrich, who was Admiral Dahlgren's son, to kill Davis and the Confederate cabinet. We may find out that he was more direct in removing Hannibal Hamlin as vice president and promoting Andrew Johnson, which is what we think happened. And that he made political decisions and
what's the conventional view now about the vice president?
That he did have that Hannibal Hamlin would not have been dropped for Johnson if Lincoln did not have some say in this, and because he wanted the Union governor of Tennessee for that, and of course the Republican Party had changed to the National Union Party to try to bring in war Democrats and know-nothings and old Whigs and so on, free soilers and so on. So, those are just some examples. I mean, the Emancipation Proclamation, what was his thinking, despite Alan Gelzo's new book on the Proclamation and the one that Harold and Edna Green Medford and I did this spring.
Which I read the other night.
The sense of timing. African Americans think like Edna thinks he didn't act soon enough. Others think that his sense of timing was superb. What were his relations with certain Congress people, Senate and House? More into the cabinet crises of December 1862, where there was that really mini coup by Chase, and he was deflated when Lincoln invites the whole cabinet in except Seward the next night.
Are we going to have to tease these sorts of things out of the existing body of work, or do we really think there's some hidden treasure trove of writings or...
I think both. I think both. I think a reevaluation, and I think finding original source material, even if it's collateral, Frank could help. Could help on this.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put a link to Lerone Bennett's book in the interview. I don't want to get into talking about the book. People can go to that and see what he says and figure out why you would sort of be on the other side of that whole thesis. I have a narrower question. Not what you think of the book, but whether you've been on a panel with Bennett or otherwise have had a face-to-face with him.
No, but I will tell you this. We invited him, when the book came out, we invited him to the Lincoln Forum. Not everybody agreed because we wanted another point of view.
Sure.
He came articulate, smart, and some...
He walked into the lion's den.
But everyone was polite.
Sure.
That's the whole nature of the forum, is the civility, family, community spirit.
That's why
we started this, for one reason. And some people, took issue. But you know, Frank, not that I was afraid to confront him, maybe because I was the host, maybe because any agitation or counterarguments wouldn't matter a tinker's damn with him.
He's locked in.
I didn't try. I think he's wrong. He knows I think he's wrong because he's taking Lincoln out of context on the worst day. So I really didn't. I'm not sorry. I mean, I think it was just the better thing to do. Sometimes I've learned the hard way. It's not worth getting into a pissing contest with a skunk.
I know you don't agree with his conclusions, but do you respect his scholarship?
No. Okay. I don't think it's good scholarship. The same with Lind and the same with DeLorenzo. It's not good scholarship. When you start with a preconceived view and you try to prove it with evidence that's less than circumstantial and definitely taking out of context.
Okay. Now, two books, actually, Herndon's Lincoln and Lincoln's Herndon. I think they make a wonderful pair. Billy Herndon was, of course, Lincoln's law partner during the politically fertile 1850s. Now, here's the question. On a day-to-day basis, before the presidential years, Herndon knew Lincoln the lawyer and thinker better than anyone else who ever decided to write about him. Is that true?
I think so. But still, he was an enigma, and I think there were things that Billy Herndon didn't know.
Like when Lincoln was kidding them about Niagara Falls.
Yes.
I wondered where they got all that water
from. Now, I will say this. There's a new book on Herndon's Lincoln, edited by Rodney Davis and Doug Wilson from the Lincoln Center at Knox College in Galesburg, where one of the Lincoln-Douglas debates. Two fine authorities, scholars, researchers. I haven't read it yet. I have the book. It came. But what it does is it goes through Lincoln's biography and tries to straighten it out as far as the facts are concerned.
You mean it goes through Herndon's?
Herndon's biography of Lincoln and tries to straighten out.
Which is still going to leave us with all those rich, juicy anecdotes. I mean, if you talk about the Lincoln the mystic, Lincoln the enigma, Lincoln the otherworldly type, nobody comes close to Herndon and being a source for those.
That's why this book is, in fact, I think the ALBC gave a subventure to the University of Illinois Press to help bring it out. And the whole ALBC is listed on a frontispiece page as supporting this project one of the few things we've been able to agree on.
You have been listening to the audio portion of my author profile with Judge Frank J. Williams, Lincoln Scholar from Providence, Rhode Island. For more information on the author profile series, write me using frankgregorsky@aol.com. That's GREGORSKY. Or just go to the homepage of www.exactingeditor.com. I thank you for your time and interest.